This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
We've seen it on TV. Someone lost, exhausted, sun beating down, no water in sight, and then the ultimate survival moment, they're drinking their own urine. It's been made famous by Bear Grylls, who swears it's a last resort way to stay alive. But is it actually helping, or is it secretly making things worse? Well, joining us is Matthew Barton, lecturer from Griffith University. Matthew, welcome to Drive.
Thank you for having me.
When we see someone drink their own urine on a survival show, what state's their body in when they're at that point where they're thinking they need to drink urine?
Well, I think it's being desperate. You know, you're in a situation, emergency situation, where you are forced to kind of do something like that. And thirst and hunger can make you do all sorts of extreme things. So I'm guessing that's probably the neurological processing of why a person may consider drinking their urine. It's similar to those who might be stuck out at sea or on an island without water. They may consider drinking seawater, which probably would have a similar outcome if you had too much of it. Not a great thing for your body.
To drink,
but in some situations, the urine may be beneficial, but there would be a lot of questions before you go ahead with that.
So if you're in a situation where, say, you've got water available but it's dirty, I mean, we know that water can carry some nasty diseases. Would you consider the urine as an option, or what would you do then?
Well, it's a hard one to answer. I mean, the first thing I would say as a clarifying point is that urine is a waste product that the body's putting out because it no longer requires it. So urine essentially is the filtered product from your kidneys of your blood. Mm. So approximately 180 litres of blood goes through your kidneys each day. And most of it is reabsorbed back into your blood because we wouldn't want to be urinating, you know, 180 litres of urine per day.
Sometimes so I feel like it.
a significant amount, 99.9% of it goes back into your blood. However, certain byproducts can be kind of toxic if they start building up in your blood. Most notably is a product known as urea. Urea is our way of handling ammonia. Now, ammonia comes from a molecule that we call amino acids. Amino acids are the building blocks for proteins. And so when we eat proteins and when proteins are metabolized in our body, we have to get rid of it. Other animals do it differently, but for us, our liver has created a lovely system which has put it into a safe form. Because ammonia is very harsh. It's what we clean our bathrooms with. Mm. So we don't want that building up in our blood. So our liver converts it into a safer molecule called urea. But still that, too much of that in the blood will cause havoc to the body. And so the best way that we deal with it is to put it in our urine. So to go to your question, if you were out in the bush and you had no water or your water was dirty or questionable, should we drink urine? The first thing I would say is it really depends on how well hydrated you are. If you're extremely well hydrated and your urine color is clear to straw color, that would suggest that most of the urine would be water. So in that case, and I think this is where Bear Grylls was alluding to, the first pass of that through your body, most of it, probably again 97-98% of it is water. So that probably would have some degree of hydration effect on your body. But as the hours tick on, particularly if it's really hot, like it's been in Australia recently, your body is starting to lose water regardless of, you know, you're trying to hold on to it because you lose water through your breath, you lose it through sweating, you lose it through your bowel, and you lose it through your urine. So slowly that hydration status of your body is dropping and your kidneys are trying to hold on to as much water as it can. And by doing so, it just what comes out in your urine becomes more and more concentrated. And you probably notice that yourself when you're dehydrated, your urine starts to change colour to a darker golden colour.
Definitely.
Consuming this would start to become very harmful. Similar to drinking seawater. It would cause more problems to your body than actually consuming it.
Matthew, let's say we had a colour palette in front of us, if you just used the colours to determine if you were hydrated or dehydrated, what sort of colour should we be looking for? Like you mentioned, a straw colour is okay. Is it anything beyond that?
Yeah, it's clear to straw is generally a good indication that you're well hydrated. As it starts to become more and more yellow, that would be suggesting that it's becoming more concentrated. So it's the body's way of holding on to more water molecules, and it's just got more dissolved things in it, which usually are electrolytes, urea, creatinine, those kinds of things. When it changes to different colours, that could indicate different things like UTI, so urinary tract infections, and particularly if it changed in smell and things like that, that's also an indication you may have infections. But going to your point about drinking dirty water, it's also important to note here that your urine isn't sterile. And so...
it's a myth.
So even though your blood's sterile, meaning nothing growing in it, what the kidney processes, still sterile, but as it starts to leave the kidneys, which is a tube called the ureters, and goes down into your bladder, from about the bladder onwards, there are microorganisms in there. So there is a possibility also by drinking your urine, you can give yourself an infection. And that is, again, something you don't really want in the bush, is to have some kind of diarrhea or vomiting from something you've drunk. And so that also lends itself to the point you made about dirty water. Is consuming it going to cause more havoc? I mean, ideally, if you had some kind of, product that can clean it, sterilize the water, or maybe you can boil it, then that could work. But you'd have to be very mindful of what you're drinking, because that can make things a lot worse.
We're chatting with Matthew Barton from Griffith University about whether drinking your own urine can help you if you're lost in the bush. Matthew, let's say we were in that situation where there was no water, we're lost, we're really thirsty, we need to drink something. And how much urine would you have to drink to just sort of meet the minimum to keep yourself ticking over, rather than sort of sitting there and, I'll drink a bottle?
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's hard to answer definitively because, again, there's a lot of variables in it. It depends on how much hydration you started with, how hot the day is, how humid the day is. That will determine how much water you're losing. Also, your activity levels, and also your age. Younger we are, the better our kidneys are working, but as we get older, each decade, the ability for our kidneys to recycle and do these kind of jobs about keeping our blood filtered well and getting rid of the nasty stuff, less efficient. So there's a lot of variables in the mix. We're ballpark, we're probably losing about a litre a day normally of urine. So you'd probably want to reestablish that if you could per day. Mm. That's removing all the other variables out of it, which you wouldn't have in the bush. You're subject to the environment. So you would be losing a lot of things to the elements. So, going without fluids in a hot environment like the bush, you'd be talking days of survival, not weeks. Unlike food, in our recent book, we published a book on the human body. You can go months, and there was one individual who went a bit over a year without eating pretty much anything. He started quite large, but without some, vitamins and fluids, he was able to survive over a year without any food. So you can do it without food, but water, definitely, you're only talking days.
I struggled to make my 16 8-hour intermittent fasting, Matthew. Yeah, alone a limit.
That's a strong line.
Now, if you were filming a survival documentary and it was real survival. In fact, this message came in from Mel in Williamstown saying TV survival is not real survival. What would you do in terms of what would you take with you for the situation that you're in now where you don't have anything to drink?
Good question. And actually, I remember reading a book. There was a gentleman in the United States of America. I think his name was Aaron Ronaldson or something similar to that. And he was an outdoors person, spent a lot of time outside. And he was canyoning, I think in Utah. And he was going down a canyon and he pulled a boulder down with him. And his arm got stuck between the wall and the boulder. There's a movie about this, actually. And he basically captured, so he had like one of those camel packs where it's like a bladder of fluid, but he got through that quite quickly. And then what he did was he urinated into that bladder and allowed it to settle and then drank the top part of it. And that provided him with some hydration, but it did still require him, unfortunately, to cut part of his arm off to get out of that situation, which he did survive. But that was an amazing story. So in his case, he did have a little bit of water and I think he had a chocolate bar or two with him. But the only thing, if I can remember correctly, that he recommended that he did, if he had the situation again, was notify people of where he was going and when he should be back. So those kinds of things are probably very important, particularly when you are going out into the wilderness and there is a potential of being lost. Not only take some things with you, but notify people where you're likely to be going.
Matthew, great chat, great tips. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. That was Matthew Barton from Griffith University.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.